Everyone got one. What's your opinion? This is the rap room. Tongues won't be bit. Ain't no rules, just spill it. And anybody can get it. No limit. We here to kill it. You tuning into the thrillers. And no, ain't no stopping. Any topic, even the random.
We get to win.
I hope that you ready. We entering in the zone soon. We on a grown shit. Welcome to the rap room.
That's it. That's all I got to say.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest, and you guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room, where we keep it street, we keep it opinionated, we keep it what?
2015.
All right, people. Linnell, that was going down. I like that. So on this show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture, but our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft, shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we like to say.
Mm-hmm.
Say.
Mm-hmm.
So today, check it out, you guys. We're live here today at the Hatchery Press, which is a kick-ass new writer spot over here in the Larchmont area in Hollywood. So for all you writers, actually, it's I'm going to let my girl Talia, who is the owner here, just to give you guys a little blurb about this place.
Wait. She's covering her face like people can see her. It's like, no one can see this. Us.
So, Talia, step in here and just tell the kids about what the place is like.
Okay. Is this the right level? It's a fantastic spot. It's a workplace for all kinds of writers. We definitely have a majority screenwriters. This is Los Angeles. We provide everything that you need to get your work done. Wi-Fi, free tea and coffee, all kinds of books. We've got a quiet library, conference room, beautiful deck with tomatoes and butterflies, and it's gorgeous up there.
She fed me a fresh tomato, and it was delicious.
After this, during intermission, I'm going to give you a strawberry. That's not even a joke.
Oh, my God. We're moving in.
And it's just a community as well. We have lots of events. Like, we had that event with Paul and Jeff last week, a screenwriting seminar, and we have one of our members is teaching a memoir class. We do free classes every week, twice a week, poetry.
What? I'm sorry. Wow. Free classes?
Yeah, free. We try to keep things affordable, as affordable as possible. Mm-hmm. Free is the best you can get. It's open 24/7 for members.
24 hours? Wait, is this your spot?
It will be.
Is this your spot? No?
Well,
okay, all right, very good.
And,
okay.
And we do a free day pass, so come by, say hi, and check it out for the day.
I mean, if y'all don't take advantage of that, I'm going to slap every single one of you out there.
You know what I'm saying?
You get a free day pass. So yeah. A day. You can come out for 24 hours and sit here.
Until 7.
Okay, till 7.
And wait for inspiration to come to you.
You know, and take advantage of, like, free classes.
Well, let me tell you, because I came, was it last Monday? Yeah, last Monday, Kevin came in. Kevin Killebrew sitting in with us. What's up, Kev? What's up, Kev? What's up, Kev? And I came in last week and, you know, did some work in here, and it was a great little spot. Mm. So, you know, we'll be talking. We'll be looking it up. So anyway, y'all hear her voice. That's my girl, Lisa Bolakaja.
Hello.
What's up, girl?
Well, nothing much.
I feel like it's been a while, isn't it? It's been like 2 weeks.
It's been
like
a couple of weeks. Yeah. Things are going on. So, you know, the new story is going to be popping up pretty soon. So Tuesday, all people out there, check out Uncanny Magazine. I have a story in there called Three Voices. For those of you who can afford to buy the magazine and support Uncanny Magazine, I think it's like $2.
Okay.
And if you can't afford $2, you can wait until June 2nd.
Okay, you can't afford $2.
Or if not, you can wait until June 2nd and you can read it online for free.
Okay.
You know, but it's an amazing cover.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing cover done. Right. I think it's Tran Nguyen who did the cover.
Okay.
And it's amazing, and that's going to be the dress I'm going to wear to the Nebulas next month. I keep telling people, you know, that's what I'm wearing. So,
okay. So
yeah, a lot of things going on. For those of you who are going to be in Madison, Wisconsin anytime soon, I'll be there in a couple of weeks at the WisCon, the Feminist Sci-Fi Convention. I'm going to be doing a reading, and I'm also going to be on two panels. So check me out on Gendered Hair and the mixtape. And the mixtape is going to be talking about black music and futurism and sci-fi, and how black people always put sci-fi in their music, from Sun Ra to Janelle Monae, P-Funk, Flying Lotus. So I'll be on that panel talking.
You in the right genre talking.
Yeah.
So since you're going to get out with all the little sci-fi stuff and all the little genre stuff, we might as well introduce the guest today.
I know, I'm excited.
I go, my home team over here.
All right.
My WGA road dog over
here.
That's where I'm at.
This is my girl right here. Y'all don't even know. This is my girl. So we got my girl. Lisa, I was about to call her.
She's about to call me Lisa.
Oh my God.
She's about to call me Lisa.
It's like
when your mom or your dad says that, and they call your name, and like, you know who you are.
Exactly. But we got my girl, Linnell White, you guys. I'm talking writer, director, producer, staff writer on some shows, which we're going to really get into.
Okay, cool.
And we are, like, freaking glad to have you here. And so I was about to say, my girl love sci-fi,
yes.
love genre,
yes.
you know what I mean? So we got a lot to talk about today.
Yes.
So how you doing, girl?
I'm doing awesome. I am so glad to finally be here because you've been asking me for a minute.
Every time,
has it been a year?
Yeah.
Yeah. We would cross paths at the Writers Guild and he's like, when are you gonna be on my show? When are you gonna be on my show? I'm like, oh yeah.
And she was waiting to have something to tell
exactly.
me.
That
was
I had nothing to talk about, you know. Mm-hmm. But so I just want to talk about Hilliard for a second because you've been okay. doing this show for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And people might not know what a good guy you are.
Oh, don't make
and
me cry
probably,
now.
It probably comes across in, you know, in your interviewing and in the podcast. But here's how Hilliard and I met. We were at a meeting at the Writers Guild, which it wasn't a very well-attended meeting. It was only
okay.
There were more people in this room right now than there were.
What?
Okay.
So, what?
This is the former yes. Black committee.
Yes.
Okay, now it's like 30 motherfuckers.
Okay, all right. Yeah, very good. Yeah. Okay.
Now, I wasn't going to say the name, but you said the name.
So hey,
it's
okay.
out there now.
Hey, I'll put it out there.
I was going to keep it, a vague meeting. Yeah.
She's going to be all low-key about
I
it.
Know,
but
I ain't afraid to fight. I fight.
So,
hashtag fight me.
I met Hilliard at the meeting, and there were four other people there. And long story short, of everyone there, you know how everyone does the, oh, give me your business card, let's keep in contact, blah, 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 and we exchange information.
Right.
Hilliard was the only person in that room who followed up with me afterwards and was like, hey, how are you doing? What's happening with your career? How can I help in any capacity? Blah, blah, blah. So, and he actually, you brought me to shadow you
yeah.
on one of your directing
gigs. She gonna make me cry, y'all. Mm-hmm.
No, no, I mean, you brought, I mean, you were legitimately being a friend, you
mm-hmm.
know, and you didn't hardly know me, but you're like, hey, I'm doing something. Would you like to tag along? I was like, sure.
Mm-hmm.
So I tagged along with you to Kim Williams, web series.
The Unwritten Rules, which was a hit show.
Right,
yeah.
right.
And then Kim Williams, you know, from that, asked mm-hmm. me to come direct for her other mm-hmm. web series. Yep. So it helped me, mm-hmm. you know, my directing mm-hmm. and just another
She's a badass director.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't
know. Yeah, you are. Good look, she helped me out of some fucking holes, okay? And I've been directing for a while.
You had a complicated day. You had it a complicated was, day.
Yeah,
okay,
sure.
How are you going to direct? Look, all them pages in like
it was
two
a lot of
hours.
It was a lot of pages and a lot of extras and just yes. it was too much to try
it was
and do
way
a day.
Too much.
But mm-hmm. I was just so glad you asked me. And yeah. I showed up on time. You know, just do a little mm-hmm. thing. Show up on time. Mm-hmm. Don't be a pest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just mm-hmm. facilitate the work.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Right. So I just want to let everyone know what a diamond in the rough Hilliard
Thank you.
Is.
Yeah. Thank you.
Because this town is a lot of people. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll call you. I'll talk to you. Whatever.
You hear that, Talia? You hear it?
Yeah.
All the time
I'm so
you hear that.
Special.
I don't think I'm like that now. You gotta yeah. tell them I'm not like that.
Oh, you hear that? You hear that, Talia? She ain't nobody. Don't worry about it. Well, thank you very much,
and Linnell. Lisa. Mm. I know you from Twitter because you.
Oh my God.
Okay.
You were on Pilar's show.
Oh, that's
podcast,
right. Yes.
And you mentioned something about Guardians of the Galaxy, which will always stick in my head.
Because my dude bro comment?
Yes, the dude bro comment. Because
That's
when
hilarious.
I saw the movie, I was like, there's something not satisfying to me about this movie when I walked out the theater. I was like, yeah, it's fine, but there's something I could not connect with.
Mm-hmm.
And when I heard you say the term dude bro, I was
right.
like, I got it.
That's what it is.
The
I mean,
problem
it's,
is
yeah.
the dude bro saves the universe.
Right.
The dude bro comes to the other side of the galaxy where all these people have this advanced technology and all these different other
yeah.
people, mm-hmm. cultures.
And how you gonna come up in here?
And the white dude bro comes in.
Right.
I have the answers.
Right.
I just...
Right.
Problem with it.
Right.
Problem mm-hmm. with it.
So. I mean, he could be woven into the story like, oh, I can help you do whatever you guys are already doing, but it's like, it's just tiresome. It's just tiresome.
Yeah.
And it's kind of goes
trope.
Into... It, yeah, and it kind of goes in with the whole thing, and I'm upset with Marvel right now.
Okay.
With the whole
oh,
idea...
You know,
this is side, sorry, I'll make it quick. Okay? I'm gonna make it quick. You know, so you know, Marvel, the movie came out,
mm-hmm.
okay, Age of Ultron, you know, mm-hmm. making lots of money, mm-hmm. lots of people are going mm-hmm. in to see it. But this is my main pet peeve. I mean, you already know I'm pissed because they ain't did a Black Widow movie yet.
Okay, we need to talk about that.
But yeah, how are you going to have a movie where she's integral to the crew?
Mm-hmm.
She's part of the squad. And yet, when I went to go and buy, like, I'm going to go to Italy and go see my niece and nephew. Thank you.
The toys
I went to go get the stuff to go take to Italy with me to see my niece and nephew. I'm like, mm-hmm. hey, here's the Age of Ultron. And so I'm like, oh, my niece would really love this thing. They got all the dudes in there.
You have
and
Hawkeye,
don't have Black,
but you don't have Black
yeah,
Widow.
But you don't have Black Widow.
You have Ultron, but you don't have Black Widow.
Okay, you got a robot.
a robot that no one knows anything about.
And Black Widow running around, saving yeah. dudes, doing stuff, and you can't even make an action figure for her? And you cannot use the argument that girls don't buy action figures.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had army figures. Mm-hmm. I had my godson. When you come to my office at work, my day job, I run an outdoor science school.
Mm-hmm.
I got my Michonne action figures.
Mm-hmm.
I got my Dare. I got my Godzilla. I've got all my
Thank
little
God
action
they got
figures.
Michonne.
Yeah.
You should get them if they're not even on the show.
Thank you. Yeah. And so it's kind of like fulfilling that thing. Oh, girls don't buy it because you don't freaking make them for them.
Well, they make a limited quantity. I think they had some Black Widow, and then it's sold, like they made such a small quantity, it sold out. I mean, I'm like,
oh, you make Lisa. you make a small quantity, it sells out. Yeah. Ding,
and
ding,
then you
ding,
don't make
some more.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm like you. I grew up, I had my parents. I mean, I like the Voltron Transformers.
Yes.
I'm showing my age here. Mm-hmm.
Did you have the He-Man stuff?
I also had She-Ra.
Thank you.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Princess of Power. And right. I had all her friends, too.
Thank
Frosta
you.
And, you know, whoever.
I mean, my She-Ra used to come and hang out with my Barbie dolls. She used to roll through and, like, you know, Barbie got her little Corvette. You know, She-Ra, she flying in on some stuff.
My other issue with Black Widow. Since we're going, okay. Scarlett Johansson, if you look at the cast, who is the one person this past year and a half who went off on their own and had their own project that banked? She was in Lucy. Mm-hmm. That movie made over $350 million. Mm-hmm. I think that's...
And Under My Skin? Mm-hmm. Or was it Skin? Was it Skin? Under My Skin.
No, nothing against Chris Evans, right. Jeremy Renner, Robert Downey Jr., you know, and Mark Ruffalo. Mm-hmm. But they're not going out and doing that kind of project where they're pulling in that kind of money.
True. Mm-hmm.
But yet, I look in the credits at the end of the film, and she's the fifth or sixth one down.
Of course.
I'm saying, whoa, 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 you know? I mean, Chris Evans is great. I love Chris Evans. Snowpiercer is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't pull in the kind of money that Lucy pulled in.
Right.
So why are you sitting here saying we can't make the toy?
Right.
We don't have the toy on the shelf. It's just, there's no logic to it to me.
So that's my protesting. I'm not going to see the Avengers the first weekend. I'm going to wait till next weekend.
Okay.
Because you're not going to get my money the first weekend because this is my little protest. You're going to get my money, but you're not going to get it this weekend. So whatever numbers you thought you were going to get.
She's going to tease them, y'all. She's going
to
tease them.
And I go to my, you know, I go to my little cheap, you know, my 2 o'clock show and you get in for like $4.
That's not it, you know.
So, you know, so my little $4 you're not getting this week.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay. So on that little side note,
sorry,
y'all.
No, it's good.
Sorry.
It's good.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Two women on your show.
Okay.
It's like going in on Black Widow.
Hey.
Look, two genre girls,
okay.
too.
Okay.
So let's go into you a little bit.
Okay.
Just give us a little gist, where you come from, how you got into the game, and we'll spend time talking about process and writing.
She's got
and
a great background
got a great
from,
story.
Like, I'm thinking, I need to talk to her afterwards for my book.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure. Oh, my God.
Anytime.
Yes.
Anytime. So I'm originally from New York. Mm-hmm. People don't always hear it in my voice, but it's there occasionally when if I get angry, it'll come out.
That Freeport will come out.
You talking to me? Yeah. All right. So I'm from New York. I was a hardcore sci-fi kid, even though little Black girls in New York weren't typically bringing the Empire Strikes Back lunchbox to school. That was me. Other girls had My Little Pony and Strawberry Shortcake. Again, I'm dating myself.
High five.
But
none of that shortcake. Forget My Little
My Little Pony.
I had the Empire Strikes Back. And
thank you.
All the boys in school were like, oh, that's cool. That's cool. That's cool. And I was like, this is just what I like. I wasn't trying to impress anybody. I love Star Wars. I love Star Trek. Star Trek Next Generation was my show.
Mm-hmm.
It premiered on my birthday, so I feel like we are
that was your present. Yes,
besties. To be together.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, I love science. I love math. I was good at those in school. And my parents were like, "Well, what are you gonna do with yourself?
Mm-hmm.
You know, go be an engineer or something. Go go to school and like continue in the sciences." I was like, "Okay, that sounds good." But I love space. You know, where can I go and do something with space?
Mm-hmm.
Oh well. You know, we have the Air Force. I was like, that sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
So I was 17. I went to the Air Force Academy in Colorado. I spent 4 long, painful.
Really?
I mean, it's a beatdown.
It's playing.
Beat down.
It's playing a little bit.
It's like West Point. It's you know, you've heard of West Point.
Oh, yeah. Right?
For the Army, where they, you know, you do the boot camp during the summer. They break you down. That you're nothing. And then from freshman year on up, you build yourself back up into a person.
Mm-hmm.
Into a leader, into someone that can then go out and command people and operate in today's military. So I went to the Air Force version of that, which is in Colorado, and it was 4 years. It was school and college, and I got my degree, but also had to clean my room, and I had to be at intramurals, and I had to be up at 6 a.m. and we had to march, and we had parades, and my Saturdays weren't always my own.
Okay,
you know, because we had so many commitments and responsibilities in terms of. You know, inspection, parade, football game that you had to go to.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't an option. And then on top of that, iron your uniforms, and you know, I mean, did you just have, and then you have responsibilities in your squadron in terms of mentoring the younger cadets in your squadron, or you have a leadership position. So it was a busy 4 years. It was tough, but after that, and you had to be physically fit too.
Yeah.
You know, so run your mile and a half, and you know, and do your push-ups and your pull-ups and all this other stuff.
Wait, did you have to run a mile and a half every day?
In boot camp, for sure. For sure. At least. At least.
And that's a short day. Okay.
With a rifle, too. So, yeah. It was a beating. And I'm doing this in Colorado, which is a mile up.
Oh, my God. Okay. In the high altitude.
I was in the best shape of my life when I was, 18,
she's still
19.
In good shape.
And when she came down the mountain, like, she'd run people ragged.
So, anyway, I did that. And then while I'm there, I was like, my only thing was I want to get a space job. I want to work in space. I want to, I was getting my degree in engineering, and I was learning how to track satellites in my computer programs. I was like, all right, this is going to be great. I was very nerdy. Yeah. Then while I was there.
So when the apocalypse happens, we got to make sure she can track the stuff. Nerd, okay.
So, and I'm taking forever to tell this.
No.
Anyway, ahead. So while I was there, needs of the Air Force, they say, we have a pilot shortage. We don't have enough pilots in the cockpits. We need pilots. Mm. And I'm like, oh, okay. It'd be cool to fly, I guess. Mm-hmm. My eyes are pretty good. I passed the.
She went all R. Kelly on us. Exactly.
Yeah, but the eyes are a big thing. If you don't have depth perception, if you can't see colors, and that eliminated a lot of people who were dying to be pilots because their eyes were not good. So I had good eyes. I could, I was the right height and weight. I could fit in the cockpit. I could do the maneuvers that we had in our little training program. So after that, I went to pilot training. And so and let's just sort of summarize. I spent 10 years on active duty in the Air Force. I flew the KC-135, which is an air refueler. It's big gray 707. Mm-hmm. Same jet that John Travolta flies.
Really? Mm-hmm.
Same body, but instead of, he's got, leather seats.
Okay.
And a hot tub.
Exactly. We got the inside and we just put gas in it.
Really?
And so, yeah. And I got to.
So just to transport stuff or something?
Well, we transport people a little bit, but it's mostly we put fuel in it so that we can refuel other planes in the air.
And you do it while you're in the air.
So you were flying an airplane and you're the one who was in the air. Because they have that tube thing that comes down and sticks down.
It's called the boom. Yeah. See, Lisa knows a lot.
So they go.
She reads.
No, but it's like, to me, that's always fast because it's the timing and everything.
Yeah.
And you've got
to. The rendezvous of trying to get the two airplanes together at the same moment.
And fueling.
Once you hook up, it's not as hard. It's kind of like, oh, okay.
And then you got to let. Oh, my God.
You just press the button and let it go.
You're playing the hookup. Well, the other thing from being in the receipt or being in the. I've got the gas and I'm giving it to old boy in the back. One thing I have to worry about was how much fuel. I have to make sure I have enough fuel for me.
Okay, giving them the gas. And oh, damn.
So you're constantly managing this fuel panel, which is from 1950. Those planes were built in 1950. Right. And so I'm flipping switches and trying to make sure. And you don't want to give them fuel from certain parts of the aircraft because then you can mess with your center of gravity.
Right.
There's so much to it.
I mean, see, that's not the job for me.
Yeah. Right. So then after that, I did that for a while. I flew that plane for 4 years, and then I was transferred to little southwestern Illinois, a place called Scott Air Force Base, which is right outside of St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And then I started flying Lear jets, which is a white, little business exec jet. Mm-hmm. And I would fly the generals to all their meetings. So I would.
Oh, cool.
I would take, because we have 26.
She out there with Colin Powell, cousin and
okay.
stuff.
Yeah.
Well, close. And I did fly some congressional members too. And I also flew some Medal of Honor members. Mm-hmm. And just, it was great. And it was a good day job because when I was in the tanker, in my previous aircraft, I was deployed a lot. Especially after 9/11 happened, I was never home.
Right.
I was always gone, which was great when you're in your 20s. Mm-hmm. I got to see the world. I mean, I've been to places like Iceland. I mean, who goes to Iceland?
Right.
What a great pitch when you're in the room. You see why you get staffed a lot, because when you go in a room and you pitch that you've been all over the world, your experiences are just frequent. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, that's amazing.
I know the Middle East a lot better than... Okay. I probably want to, but it was my job in your 20s, to get to do that and to have that responsibility. I mean, I was 25 and my jet was $42 million and the fuel on it cost another, half a million or whatever. And I've got to get the mission done. And I've got my crew that I've got to make sure that, they're taken care of. They're eating, they're, sleeping. They're not having issues that we can get it done. So it was phenomenal. So then I flew the Lear jets for a while, which was fine. But then around 2005, 2006, I was coming up on the end of my commitment with the Air Force.
Right.
And I said, okay, what do I want to be when I grow up? This flying thing's fine, but I feel like there's something else I need to be doing. And there was a little movie called Brokeback Mountain.
Yes. Yes.
I tell everybody this. I loved, movies my whole life, and I loved TV my whole life. You're looking at someone who snuck onto the Warner Brothers lot back in 90... 8.
Yeah,
or
she did some thug shit. You see what I'm talking
because
about?
I was so in love with this show called Lois and Clark, okay, the new Avengers Superman. So I was like, okay, I gotta sneak on the. So I snuck on a lot. Please, Warner Brothers, do not come at me now. Let it go.
That's like me at Universal Studios. Yeah. Okay.
But I always loved it, and so in 2005 I went. And I saw this little movie called Brokeback Mountain that was getting a lot of buzz. Mm-hmm. And they were showing it in St. Louis at one of the art house theaters. I tried to go on a Friday night. It was sold out. I'm like, what the? Mm-hmm. And then I was like,
they don't know who I am?
Right.
No. It was just that I didn't realize we had such a strong gay population in St. Okay. Louis. I was like, they all came to see the movie. Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right, well, I'm buying my ticket in advance. I'm coming back Saturday. Mm-hmm. So when I saw the movie, was floored. Mm-hmm. When I walked out onto the street, I was like, why didn't I make that movie? That's the kind of movie I want to make.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And the other message in the movie is, you know, if you're familiar with it, spoiler alert, I don't want to give
away. Okay,
It's been a couple
first
years.
Of all.
But it's been a couple of years. Too late.
One of the characters in the movie, it's about the life you didn't choose to take because one of the characters is like, we could have had a good life together, but you didn't want it. And there's always that regret that I could have, should have, would have. And I was like, I do not want that regret in my life. So what is it I want to do? So from that point on, I started writing and directing short films. Mm-hmm. Getting involved in the St. Louis, you know, independent film scene, which isn't large, but is committed to doing what they can. Because
What's that one film you showed me that I love with the hotel and the guy?
Oh,
and the
Good
girl?
Night Trina. So that was one. One of the samples I sent. You know, fast forward a couple years later, that was one of the samples I sent that got me staffed on Army Wives. Just the script, yeah. So it's that, and so I was just trying to write and direct short films, and then. I met a man named Ken Lezebnik, who's from Missouri. He's written on Touched by an Angel. He's written on Star Trek Enterprise. Mm-hmm. I think he wrote on that show. And he was, you know, from Missouri. He came back. He did a workshop for women. And I attended and, you know, made a connection with Ken, kept in contact with him. And it's all about being professional, being on time, not being one of the troublemakers in the program, contributing to the program, and stepping up in a leadership role a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because that just sort of comes naturally to me. Sure. Mm-hmm. You know, if I see a vacancy, I'm like, oh, you know, who's managing the schedule of when we're, you know, working in this program? Because we were helping him shoot a pilot that he wrote. Okay. So he had written a pilot and he had brought some of his friends who were actual Hollywood people to do the key crew positions. And we were just shadowing. Right. Sure. So from that, you know, I kept in contact with Ken. And then he hits me up in 2012. And says, oh, Linnell, what are you up to? I was like, well, I'm debating film school. I'm debating this. I don't know what I'm going to do. Da, da, da. He's like, send me your writing samples. Army Wives, the showrunner, is looking for a veteran because he's lost someone from his staff. And he'd love for it to be a woman, you know, and a veteran is a plus. So just send me your samples. We'll see what happens. So I was like, all right. This is Hollywood. I'm in St. Louis. Nothing's going to come of this.
Had you watched the show?
Yeah, I'd seen the show. Okay. I can't say I'd seen every episode of the show, but I was familiar with the show. I'd seen it. So I sent my samples, which had nothing to do with Army Wives or even related, but you know, this is my writing style. Here you go. And Jeff Melvoin, who
I love Jeff.
Yes.
That's my boy
Jeff Melvoin read my samples, liked them enough, called me on the phone, said, hey, can you come out to LA and meet with me? I was like, sure, I'll fly out to LA and meet with a executive producer of a TV show, a guy that's worked, and I looked him up, and he's, you know, he's worked.
I gotta interrupt you. Did you fly yourself? You flew?
Yeah.
Did y'all hear that? Did y'all hear that?
It's
important.
She didn't ask.
It's important.
Are you gonna send me a ticket?
Exactly.
To come?
No.
See, people always think.
Never. Because that shows that I'm committed, that I'm in.
Exactly.
I'm all in. I'll come out here and meet with you, even if nothing comes of it. I've made a connection with a executive producer
and
on
I get
a
to hang
TV
out
show.
For LA for a little bit.
For those of you guys who know, just a quick little disclaimer or whatever.
Yeah.
Jeff Melvoin is one of the top showrunners in town. He also runs the showrunners program at the Writers Guild, and he is known for being and you'll get into this in a minute. He's known for being like, you come on his show, he mentors you all the way up.
Absolutely.
And you have you
living
can get
proof
into
of
that.
Living proof of that.
Go ahead.
So I met with Jeff, and he was like, let's talk about your writing a little bit. Here's what I liked. You know, here's what I'm looking for the show. Would you like to come be on my staff? And I said, absolutely. So that's my break into the business story. It's kind of like what Jeff Thorne was talking about a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
No one else will have, you know, everyone wants, how do I break in? You won't have a similar story to what I had.
Right.
Mine is a very Cinderella, plucked from obscurity.
Mm-hmm.
And other thing, Jeff was looking for something specific. You know, it's a writer's room I tend to look at as a lineup, like a batting lineup on a baseball team.
Okay.
You're looking for a guy that can steal bases. You're looking for people with different skill sets. You don't want 15.
You're casting it.
You don't want 9 A-Rods.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll get a lot of home runs, but, you know, you got to sort of, if you get in a slump, then you're screwed.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, he was looking for, you know, a right-handed closer, you know, and I was that right-handed closer.
Who knows the world, who flies the plane.
And plus he's doing a military-related show, and I could bring some of that background to it. And we ended up bringing an Air Force character on season 7, played by Brooke Shields, who was just a complete delight. And I was just so happy to see her in the uniform that I wear, you know, I've been wearing for years, and she represented. And, and we had some good story for her to do, and she was shaking things up. I was like, all right, this is good drama. This is exciting. So, you know, that year on the show, I learned so much.
Because you had never written for television, It was mainly like screen. So when you walk in there, you're like, hello. Was your confidence level coming in?
My confidence level,
that background of the military? Or was it like, yeah, I'm going to come in there? And you just came in there like, okay, what am I doing?
My confidence level was low writing wise. But again, coming from the military, you know, spending so many years, I'm like, there's nothing out there I feel like I can't learn. I will hit the ground running. I will learn this. I'll absorb this. If it means me staying later or talking to other writers,
you can fly a plane. You can sit in the writer's room.
Look. I can fly a plane. Feel another plane.
Exactly.
Listen to music on my iPod. Make sure this 40-year-old plane don't fall out the sky.
Exactly.
I think you can handle the writer's room.
And a lot of it is knowing how to read people, which, again, you learn by managing and leading. And I mean, there were times where I was thrown in circumstances in the military where, oh, all of a sudden I'm in Cyprus. What goes on? You know, you just have to figure it out. And it's like you learn how to hit the ground with your boots on and just figure it out. It was great in terms of, because Jeff did mentor us. Jeff didn't just throw me into deep in the pool. Jeff let me write a later episode in the in the show, instead of like, you're not gonna write episode 2 and 3. You gotta let the senior co-EP do it. And then I just got to learn the room, learn how to sit there and be quiet, which you don't need to come in there day one talking.
No. People think they do, but you don't.
I mean, your job as a staff writer, learn, contribute where you can. Don't do the verbal vomit. Some people feel like, I need to be in there just talking and throwing out ideas. It's like, formulate a good idea. That's better than just throwing out 15 half-formed ideas. You know what I mean? But that's my style. And everyone wants to do that, that's fine. But my style is like to watch what's happening. I'm a big thinker. You guys have talked about being introverted people. I'm a big internal thinker. I don't need to be the funniest guy in the room. I don't need to have all the eyes on me at all times. I can sit there quietly and think, and then say, hey, well, what about if we did this? And they're like, oh, that's a good idea. You know, and just contribute any way you can. So, yeah, Jeff, I mean, I was really surprised at Jeff. There were some days where his office is way, I'm staff writer. My office is far away from him at the hallway. Not that it was a bad office, because I drove past it today, actually getting here. It's on Melrose and Van Ness, where we used to and I was like, oh, it's like that first show. I'll never forget that first show. So anyway, his office is way down the hallway, and on a Thursday afternoon, 4 o'clock, he'll just walk, you know, walk down, like the room is done or whatever. He'll just, and we're still hanging around, he'll walk down and like knock on the door, come on in, hey, did you get a chance to look at those acting, you know, auditions of the actors? I was like, was I supposed to? He's like, oh yeah, I just want your input. I'm like, I'm a staff writer. You want my, well, I just want to make sure, you know, they look like they're military and they could fill out the uniform. They look, you know, they fit the part. I was like, wow, you know, this guy don't need to ask me a freaking thing. You know, but he's just
inclusive. Already a consultant on the show.
We had him on because the show shot in Charleston, so the writer's room was here and the show shot in Charleston, so we had those people. But he was like, no, I just want your input. You know, and I was just so grateful for the opportunity. I learned so much about breaking story and act breaks, and also the process. I'm a big outliner now. Right now I'm wrestling with this outline on my current pilot I'm writing, and people are like, oh, some people are like, oh, I don't spend much time on the outline, I just want to get to the writing. I was like, no, no, the outline is what I spend, and that's what Jeff preached too. It's like, if you have an extra day or two, spend it on the outline. Do not just go writing the script, because you will get stuck.
I'll spend a month on an outline and a week or two on a script. Getting the first one out.
And that's kind of where I'm at with this latest project. So yeah, I learned outlining is key. I learned how to hear notes from a network and not get, oh my God, I can't believe, oh, how dare they? It's like, okay,
that's
hear what
interesting.
They have to say.
That's an interesting take.
We hadn't thought about it. We'll get back to you. We'll consider that. And sometimes they had some valid notes. So I can't say enough about that experience. Now, after that, you know, the show.
I was going to say, because I want to get into, this is an interesting process. You get on a show, right? And it was a good show. It was a very popular show.
Yeah.
But she just happened to come in the last season where they were about to, you know, they weren't sure if they're going to keep it on the air or not.
Right.
And then it doesn't get picked up.
Right.
Now what, motherfucker?
Now what? Yeah. Now what?
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So let's talk about it, because last year was an interesting year for you.
Yeah, it was. Because, I mean, it was, it could, you know, it's one of those things where I remember last year for staffing season, you know, I would get so crushed when my agent would send something out and we get feedback back that, oh, they're just not going to, not going to, they didn't really like you, or they're not going to recommend you for this, or that the execs don't really feel you, or whatever. And I'm like, oh, okay. And now my attitude is so different. I was like, okay. You know, just, okay, they don't like it, move on, write something else. So I spent that year after Army Wives got canceled just building up my
You wrote a couple samples. Stuff last year. Every time I told you, you had a new script, didn't you?
So I wrote a sci-fi, because, you know, sci-fi is my wheelhouse. I mean, I'm Star Trek's, you know, Star Wars girl, and so I added, like, an Air Force element to it, and so I have this ship that's time traveling and going to different parts of our history, and then and then you interact, you know. It's different. I have a black female lead and she interacts with people in 1808 or whatever. That's a different exchange than what she's used to, you know, in her time, which is, I forget, 2175.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's
like, oh, I can't do all the things I can normally do.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So I wrote that. I wrote another teen drama pilot. You know, I wrote a dabbled in short story a little bit. I wrote a one act play. I wrote a Nashville spec because I love
Nashville. This is all last
Nashville,
year.
All last year.
See but what
see,
talking
this
about?
Is what I love though. It's like, the show was over, but she wasn't like sitting there like, what am I going to do? She not only was writing screenplays, but she was doing plays, writing different things, short stories, like just kind of branching out, doing other things.
Anything.
It's just, awesome.
Because I wrote a Nashville spec because I love Nashville, like love Nashville. And I take strength from what Jeff said in the previous podcast, because he talked about how he liked Leverage. And when he trying to get on the show, they'd be like, oh, no, you're not right, you're not right. And so recently, I had my agent look into Nashville, like, hey, if they get brought back for season four, are they going to have any writing needs? And the initial answer is no, but I'm going to keep knocking on that door, you know, because I
come
love
on,
the
my
show.
Door.
Love
you can come. You can come fly by. Hey, how you doing?
So, I mean, that was just one of those things where everyone used the term network. I don't really like that word because that makes it sound like a mixer and people are there like, oh, hey, what are you doing? And I was like, that's not my... my
schmoozing, though, which I hate.
I don't like that either. But I just try to meet people and make connections and... going to events at the Writers Guild, like I'm on the women's committee at the Writers Guild, and that eventually led to my Z Nation job.
Did it?
Yes.
Well, you gotta tell us about
that. Okay. So, you know, I'm on the women's committee, you know, just contributing to meetings, talking about what events we're gonna have. Same thing any committee at the Writers Guild does. You know, we're gonna have this contest or we're gonna have this panel, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I'm sitting there, and then there were a couple meetings where I had a lady sitting next to me. Her name is Russell Rosette.
And Rochelle,
She's nice. Yeah. So she's sitting next to me, and we, you know, we chatted, whatever, and people kind of knew my background. They knew I was, you know, ex-Air Force, and I worked on Army Wives, blah, blah, and I'm, just, you know, still out here writing and doing my thing. So unbeknownst to me, Rochelle is married to the showrunner of Z Nation.
What?
Because they don't have the same last name. And I didn't find this out until I got an email from her. She was like, hey, I want you to send your info to this producer. I was like, okay, Rochelle, whatever. And like, you know, I'll send it, you know, no big deal. And I didn't know who the producer was, but I looked it up on IMDb and I'm like, oh, this person produces for Z Nation. I wonder if Rochelle has some connection to Z Nation. So I go in for the interview because they call me in and they're like...
Good sign. That means they like your shit.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. I go in for the interview and with Carl Schaefer, who's a showrunner for Z Nation. And I go in and... Yeah, he's like, oh, yeah, my wife recommended it. I'm like, Rochelle's your wife? I was like, y'all don't have the same last name. I'm out of it here. You know? He's like, oh, yeah. I was like, oh, yeah. I was like, I know her from the Writers Guild. She's like, oh, yeah, she said you'd be good. So, yeah, got the job.
Wow.
You know, I didn't think I would because I'm a sci-fi girl. I am not a zombie, vampire, horror. That's not my...
You better leave my zombies alone,
but that's part of the world. It's part of the speculative umbrella. I mean,
it's similar.
But the thing is, the showrunner and his co-EPs... You know, they weren't either. They're, I mean, Carl used to work on a show called The Dead Zone. One of the co-EPs, Michael Kazett, worked on, you know, he worked on Farscape and he's worked on a ton of sci-fi shows, you know. So they all come from different backgrounds. So even if, you know, I'm not a hardcore horror zombie person, that really wasn't what they were looking for anyway.
Well, that show isn't really hardcore zombie. It's light. It's a little, you know.
And of course, it's produced by the people who do Sharknado. So you have that.
Yes!
The Asylum.
You? All right, you people out there, don't be making fun of my Sharknado. That is like a national treasure. Mm-hmm. You need to like get with this classic.
Well, it was interesting coming to work because we had a conference room in their production mm-hmm. office, and there are sharks everywhere. Like
oh, really?
Rubber sharks with teeth and just sharks hanging from the ceiling. I'm like, wow, there are literally and
that
they were shooting
B-level perfection.
They were doing part two, or
they
what?
Were doing Sharknado 3.
Oh, 3. Yeah. Okay.
So so I started working on Z Nation, which was again I had to stretch my brain a little bit because not being a zombie person, mm-hmm. I had to go out and say, okay, what are some movies I can watch, some mm-hmm. books I can read? Let me mm-hmm. get in the right headspace, mm-hmm. you know. And so I watched a lot of different things, and you know, I think my script I turned in a couple weeks ago because mm-hmm. that room didn't.
Because you were working on that for a minute.
Well, for those people who don't know, can you just tell them what Zombie Nation is about?
Oh, Z Nation. Okay, Z-Nation. Sorry. So Z Nation is a show on Sci-Fi Network. It's season one was aired the fall of last year, mm-hmm. so I got brought in for season two. Mm-hmm. It is I would describe it as a zombie road trip. We have a core crew of people who have a mission to get someone who might potentially have the cure to the zombie virus to California. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, they pass through all these parts of America that you don't normally see. And the studios, or the network is really big on Americana and showing, hey, they're in Philadelphia, let's show the Liberty Bell.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Hey, they're in South Dakota, let's show the Mount Rushmore, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So it gives people in the flyover states who often get forgotten about,
right.
I think, something to latch onto in terms sure. of, oh, this is a show where they're passing through a place where I live. And right. so they go through Missouri and Illinois and they go through Texas. And, you know, so, yeah, we do have a black female lead on the show.
Mm-hmm. Let's tell the people who it is.
Kalita Smith.
That's my girl.
Phenomenal.
My girl. Mm-hmm. I told her she's going to be a movie
zombie.
Star.
She's a zombie killing mofo.
Yeah, that's my girl.
Yeah, so and that didn't start out initially that way. If you watch mm-hmm. season one, mm-hmm. there's obviously a different lead who's mm-hmm. a little bit bigger name, Tom Everett Scott, mm-hmm. and then it's a zombie show, so I think you can figure out what happened.
I was shocked by that.
Exactly.
I was
like, oh, wow. And that's another thing about our show is, and this is something Kalita said to us in the writer's room mm-hmm. when she came in. She was like, I get the scripts, and I look, and I go to page 45 to see if I'm still alive.
That's real talk. That's real. That's
you give her the script. She's like, let me just see if my name
the actors
up.
Don't know yeah. because we're, it just, it's, whatever mm-hmm. happens, happens. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you can have someone you think is a main character, they're gone.
I love shows like that.
You know?
You keep you on your
toes. It brings the tension so much.
Yeah. And obviously, we don't have the budget of a Walking Dead. We mm-hmm. don't have the time of a Walking Dead. Our writer's room was only 10 weeks to try and do 15 episodes.
Okay.
Crazy. And then we shoot in Spokane, Washington, so they're shooting right now.
Okay.
And so it's a lower budget show.
Do you get to go or you don't get to go?
So since, it's a lower budget show, mm-hmm. so most of the writers are not getting to go
okay.
just because there's just not the money. Mm-hmm. So we sort of get paid for our writer's room work sure. and our script. And then, you know,
every show is different.
Every show is different. Yeah. Whereas Army Wives was a 20-week, I had a 20-week deal mm-hmm. and I was there the entire, you know, 20 weeks. And then I got to go on set in Charleston, mm-hmm. you know.
With
and,
Jeff. Ain't that a bitch?
Yeah. Yeah. But with, you know, Brooke Shields mm-hmm. and, you know, all these people that been on the show for forever, and mm-hmm. then some of the new characters like Ashanti was brought on season 7 too, mm-hmm. and Jesse McCartney was mm-hmm. on the show. He was lovely. Mm-hmm. Everyone was just lovely. And Brant Daugherty, who ended up being on Dancing with the Stars, and he's so handsome. Like, mm-hmm. oh, he's so great. And you know, me having that director's mind too, it was great to be on set because I'm mm-hmm. I'm just watching everything. Mm-hmm. I'm just sitting there like, oh my gosh, like mm-hmm. they're running two cameras at one time. How am I ever going to do this? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like just trying to wrap my mind around it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Z Nation doesn't work that way. It's a lower budget, so you pay for the writer's work, and then production kind of takes off on its own, and not mm-hmm. all the writers get to go.
So do they have like an on-set producer who just handles all that?
Yeah, mm-hmm. okay. yeah. And the showrunner's up there a lot mm-hmm. For production, and he has a couple right-hand men who are okay. writer-directors too. We have mm-hmm. several writer-directors in our writer's room for Z Nation.
Oh, interesting.
But you know, like I said, we don't have the Walking Dead money, so our show is a different tone. So it's more comedic, it's more gore, it's more like. We call them what the fuck moments, like mm-hmm. whoa, a zombie
right.
baby,
right?
You know what is that?
Zombie babies, people.
You know, just like what is happening right? Mm-hmm. Like what is happening right now?
Oh my god!
Yeah, so it builds, you know, and now that it's on Netflix because it aired on Sci-Fi this past fall, and now it's transitioned to Netflix, and we're getting more people who are finding the show, mm-hmm. like oh,
right,
which is good for you guys, as writers too.
Yeah, and people are hitting us up on Twitter like, when's season two? It's taking too long. Yeah. It's like, there's a process here.
Oh, we mm-hmm. don't Twitter folks, we don't play. It's like mm-hmm. when we latch onto a show, mm-hmm. we will tweet you like we know you. Like, because so when's my DVD coming out?
Because people binged on it on Netflix, and now they're like, oh, we need more. So, mm-hmm. well, hold on a minute, you know.
Hey, TV, the nature of TV watching has changed. Like, yeah. I am a huge binge watcher. Like, that is
my... You'd be done in a day or two.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, that's how we do it now. It's like, I can watch, like, you're just so into a show. And, you know, I always get sad when our favorite shows, like The Walking Dead and stuff like that, they end. And you're just like, oh, God, what can I hang on to?
Yeah.
What can I binge watch now?
So we're hoping that people, I mean, honestly, we talk about this in the writers' room. We're like, okay, the people that like Walking Dead, maybe they're flipping through Netflix. They're like, oh, okay, what else is recommended? Oh, Z Nation.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as you don't come at it with like, well, this isn't, the production quality isn't as good as Walking Dead. Roger, we know. We aren't trying to be The Walking Dead. We are trying to be...
It's completely different.
So do you guys have, like, do the writers tweet? Like, I know, like, Sleepy Hollow and a couple of other shows, they, like, when the episode comes on, do they tweet, like, with the fans or something like
that? Yeah, I did for Army Wives. Yeah. I was all over Twitter, you know, just tweeting and just so happy that my first episode of TV was out there in the world and see your name written by Lanelle White, like on people's screens. Like, oh my God.
Oh my God, how exciting that was.
Yeah, it was very exciting. Very exciting.
That the family watching too, like, it's on right now.
Oh, and my mom was already a fan of the show, you know, because she's, you know, she's a Lifetime, you know, whatever's on Lifetime, she's going to watch
it. That's my mother too.
It doesn't matter if it's guy breaking in, stabbing you to death, Lifetime movie.
It is tastefully done.
She's going to watch it.
Yes.
And she's going to watch CBS up one side and down the other. That's my 71-year-old mother.
Right.
Who I love very much. Mm-hmm. I would not be where I am today if it weren't for her.
Mm-hmm.
I would not. So
shout out to Lon's mom.
Yeah, and Mother's Day is coming up. Reminder to all you guys. Mm-hmm. Make sure you look out for moms.
My goodness. So in the midst of working on this show, what are some other things you're working on now in terms of like feature films and stuff?
The pilot I'm working on now is very much a fish out of water story. In a black female lead. And I'm going to transport her. I don't want to give away too much, but I'm going to put her in Wyoming. And it's like, how are you going to deal with Wyoming in this circumstance and you being probably the only black person in Wyoming?
Mm-hmm.
And it all comes from, you know, some of my fish out of water experiences. You know, I remember driving through Montana and Wyoming, and I'm kind of like, I'm driving in my car because it's time when I was in the Air Force, and I was driving to like some training or some other base I had to go to for a reason. And I'm driving through these more sparsely populated areas. I'm like, okay, well, how will I be received when I get out of the car and
go in Big Sky Country
to get food or, you know, to get my gas? Like, how are these people going to look at me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm just sort of exploring that. There's also an element of talking about,
there's a little personal in there.
Yeah. Okay. And that's why the outline is just becoming, I'm wrestling this bear to the ground.
Okay.
You know, the outline has become kind of tough for me to get through because I'm just like, there's a lot of me. There's some of me in here. Not a lot, but there's some of me in here. And it's also, you know, discussion about, you know, when she gets transported to Wyoming, there's some discussion about the oil and gas industry because they're coming into these rural regions and wanting to buy land to do fracking or to do mining. And it's and what's the end game with that? What impact is it having on the environment?
Sure.
So I'm exploring that in my pilot. There are a couple features that I always have like two or three things. I'm like, okay, after I'm done with this, then I want to write this. So, I mean, there are a couple.
Which is a good thing.
I don't know. Like, I come across people like, I don't have any ideas. I'm like,
I don't understand.
I can't quite wrap my mind around that because I don't have enough time to get all the stuff done I want to get done. So there's a couple features I want to do. One is me being a female aviator and being black. Bessie Coleman.
Oh, God,
I feel like, how have we not had a Bessie Coleman movie?
Yeah.
You know, and I pitched someone at Sundance the idea, and she was kind of like, well, some people have tried to do it, and about three or four times they've tried to do the movie, and I'm like, well,
they haven't done it the way I
But let me tell you a story.
Yeah.
Quick little story. So, like, I know Lance Black, right, who wrote Milk, and we used to sit at the same coffee shop while he wrote this script, and every day he'd be sitting there writing a script, and every weekend he'd be gone. And on Monday, I'd be like, so how was San Francisco? And they'd be like, well, I just learned this. And one day we were sitting talking, I was like, don't you find it kind of weird you're writing this story? I mean, I'm glad you're writing it, but you know there's like three other scripts people are working on? He said, yeah, but nobody's going to do it the way I'm going to do it.
Right,
like, he was so confident. And it made me get the confidence to write my Sylvester script.
Because
I kept being worried, hearing stories that somebody was going to write it.
Right.
And I'm like, fucking write that script.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And so
find the right producer and you'll get the rights.
Deter me.
Yes.
Because I'm like, who else in Hollywood can write the Bessie Coleman story better than I can? Someone who's been in the cockpit, who's been in predominantly white male.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm attracted to areas that are dominated by white males. I don't know because I've
underdog stories.
I've gone from Me personally, I've gone from being a black female pilot in the Air Force, which I think I was like one of three or something my time there. And then now I've jumped to Hollywood, and that's predominantly
still one of three.
White males. Like, well, what's the deal with me? Like, can't I just, go? Sorry. What's going on with me? I don't know what it is. But it goes back to me being that kid with the Empire Strikes Back lunchbox.
Right.
I like what I freaking like.
Right.
And this is what I'm going to do.
Sure. Right.
So Bessie Coleman's one of them. There are a lot of, there's another female aviation story I want to tell besides Bessie Coleman. And people get caught up on Amelia Earhart and think she was the only one. Amelia Earhart, not the only one. There were people before her and there were people after her that run circles around her.
Right.
You don't know these stories.
Right.
I wrote this science fiction one-act play and I had submitted it to one of your guests, the Sci-Fest people.
Sci-Fi,
And it got rejected and that's cool. But at least I have a piece, you know? And I have something like trying to do sci-fi on stage. I'm like, how can we do this? You know? Because you don't have a lot of special effects and you can't, you just have to, it has to be more internal. And that's what I wrote. So I sent it to a theater company in St. Louis to them. It's like, okay, let's see what they want to do with it.
You
know,
right.
If they ever, want to, because I have a relationship with them. It's like, maybe they'll do it. I don't know. But at least, and again, I've learned, that was one thing I learned in that year after Army Wives is like, rejection, deal with it.
Right.
Deal with it.
It's going to come. It goes to everybody. I mean, Ava DuVernay. Did I say her last name wrong?
We all pronounce it different. I say DuVernay. But yeah.
Okay.
She probably got the Creole version. She probably wrote it wrong. Like, was it?
Well,
Ava D. People forget she was an MC too.
If you say Ava, everybody knows who you're talking about. So she was at, I highly recommend anyone who has, please seek out her South by Southwest keynote address. Okay, that she just did. It was like maybe, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks.
I saw it. I haven't clicked on it yet, but I saw it. Yeah.
She talks about how she was rejected from Sundance Labs.
What?
Like 5-6 times.
What?
Yes.
Yeah.
She lays it out there. And to hear her say that, and also to hear someone like Jeff Thorne say, this didn't want me, that didn't want me, I have so many rejections. You know what I did? I started an inbox on my little Gmail to the side called Rejections. And every time I get one, I just
put in that box.
Interesting.
I looked up things of people who got famous after they died. So Kafka told his friend to burn everything that I wrote because nobody gets me. And if his friend had burned everything he wrote, we would not have the term Kafka-esque.
Interesting.
Right.
The guy that wrote Confederacy of Dunces, his mother did that.
Oh my God, yes.
years after he died.
They've been trying to get that thing on film.
Pulitzer Prize. He sat in his mother's basement writing it and just, this is crap. And she begged people, can you please, he's dead.
That book is freaking hilarious.
And so you're looking at a failure. And it's like, oh my God, dead.
That
was their part of their DNA. They had to do it. No matter if they got turned down.
Yeah.
They had to.
But at least I'm putting content out in the universe. Better to get the rejections than not be doing anything.
Right. Sure.
And I mean, so Ava was rejected from Sundance Labs multiple times. She wasn't even the first director they went to Selma. She was like the third or fourth.
Interesting. Yeah. So you're learning all this. I'm about to watch that now.
You hear all this stuff and you're like, if she's, and then Sundance rejected her so multiple times for the labs, but then I think it was 2012, middle of nowhere, where she was, got
did
all the awards.
Just, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, so, just
so she basically never got in, but still made a movie,
right,
then that
exactly,
got in.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. If you look at the creator of Mad Men, Matt Wiener.
Yes.
7 years to get that show on the air. Nobody wanted it. Mm-hmm. People pitied him. When it went to AMC, people were like, oh. Because AMC wasn't...
Oh, is that even a real name?
Yeah. Oh, sorry for you. And look at it. You know, so you just don't know. So you just have to...
AMC is a new HBO on TV.
Okay, it is.
Exactly.
It really is.
And so, but at the time when his pilot was shooting for Mad Men, people were like, oh, what is that? AMC? You just never know. You just have to... like be persistent and keep at it and don't give up and just believe in yourself too. Belief and just keep going forward.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
You're right. One step away from your breakthrough. Don't give up. Keep going.
And how many times you hear about people like, I had my bags packed, I was ready to leave, and then I got stabbed. You know, it's like you just never know.
It's almost like I was talking to my partner Scott the other day about suicide and how. We were watching something and somebody was talking about how, you know, like 10 minutes ago, I wasn't feeling good. And all of a sudden, I just got up and went to the bathroom and came out. And I was like, I'm okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, that's how I feel about people who try to commit suicide.
Yeah.
It's like, if you had just waited another 5 minutes, maybe you would have snapped out of that funk. Yeah. You know what I mean?
This segues into something. Here's another thing I discovered in that year where I was writing and just kind of like getting rejected and not getting meetings, da-da-da. I have this lovely meditation center in my neighborhood over in Los Feliz.
Okay. Mm.
And so, I mean, I highly recommend any writers, creative people, you have to quiet your mind. If you can do it once a day, but do it a couple times a week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I found that my brain opened up so much after I started meditating on a regular, like once or twice a week. And just like shut it down.
Mm-hmm.
Shut it down, let it recharge. And then go back out, and then you'd be amazed at the ideas that'll come to you.
Right.
The new, like that scene you've been struggling with, like, I don't know what I'm gonna do about the scene, it's just don't work on, rip it out of the script. Easy. Go meditate. Go do some yoga, then or walk, and then come back to it.
Well, we talked about that one episode with Kevin. It's like sometimes walking or walking on the beach or just something just
change
like,
the location.
Yeah, and not even just let your mind wander and do what it's gonna do, and you could be so creative. My problem is when I do try to meditate, that's when I get my best ideas.
Right.
When
I get those too.
Like I'm trying to get my mind quiet, and all of a sudden that's when it opens up.
I get those too, and then I'm just like, okay, I gotta move that to another part of the brain, save that, but then
thank you for showing up, but I need to do this right now.
I have a lot of revelations when I'm meditating sometimes. So that has helped. And just trying. I mean, I see some people that get so focused on the writing and I gotta get staffed. It's like, can you like maintain your fitness? Can you
get your body right?
Can you? I mean, you know, there are other things and maintain your relationships with people and also, if you're so stuck on writing, have a life outside of writing. That's one of the things I tell people too. I was like, that's what helped me get my job. It was like, I had a, you know, expansive life. Like, this is my second career, you know, coming into this, you know, Hollywood TV writer thing. Mm-hmm. Have other things outside.
Well, let's talk about that real quick. You know, because I'm always interested, because you pretty much, let's say you live like 3 or 4 months out of town and you're here for the rest of it.
Yeah.
How do you do that? Let's talk about how.
I mean, Paul Guillot is my hero, by the way, because he has St. Louis ties the same way I have St. Louis ties. And he's like.
Have you met him?
I have not.
I'll hook you up.
What's up, Paul? How you doing?
But he's my hero. Like, I follow him on Twitter, and I kind of teased him too because he had mentioned how he was doing you guys a seminar, and I'd said on Twitter, "Oh, I'm not gonna be there. I'm gonna be in St. Louis." And Paul was like, "What? Who's going to St. Louis without me?" I was like, "All right, well, Paul, I'll be thinking of you when I'm eating these ribs."
I did see that. Yeah.
These world famous ribs at Pappy's Smokehouse, over in St. Louis. And then I went out and got ribs while I was there. I just came back from St. Louis, and I sent Paul a picture of my rib plate.
Oh, see?
And he didn't respond, so I'm thinking Paul's done with me. Paul's like, I'm done with him. I'm done with this chick.
He was writing his last script last week. So.
Yeah, well, I was like, ooh, no response. He might be upset about the rib picture I sent him. You know, that.
She don't send me a picture of the ribs.
Yeah, it's the balance. I mean, I definitely try and make sure I'm here for staffing season or when I know there's something that I'm definitely interested in, I will make sure I'm in town. But I have a house in St. Louis that I check up on. I have someone renting it from me right now. And of course, I have my reserve commitments because I am still an Air Force reservist.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to get you. How do you maneuver?
Yeah, but my unit is really good in terms of, I make my schedule. I'm what's called an individual mobilized augmentee. And that's a fancy word for saying I'm a reservist who comes in and helps the active duty when they want to go on vacation or when they want to, or when they are undermanned, I come in and I help them.
Do you just have to do like a certain amount of hours a year?
Yeah,
or something,
so I have to do 36 days a year is what I'm at
right now.
Oh, that's
not bad.
Yeah, so it's
about. And what month have you found is the best time to do that for you?
I'll go for like a week. Like sometimes I'll go for like a week. I went in a week in January. I went for 2 weeks this past April. Mm-hmm. So I just spread it out throughout the year. Okay. And
you don't have to be there for like a whole 2 months or?
No.
Okay.
Unless I want to be, you know? Okay. I mean, because that's another source of income for me.
Yeah.
Because I'm a major, about to be lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. And that's a decent paycheck.
All right, lieutenant colonel. Yeah. All right.
So that's not, and plus I get so much, I get so much satisfaction out of my job, which is, I'm not doing the flying thing anymore because that's a really time-consuming process. You want to talk about being stuck out for a month or two in God knows where because something's jumped off.
Right.
You know, that's not something I can really do right now with the writing career.
Because I got to do TV. I can't be...
I can't be in Saudi Arabia.
I got a show to write.
I can't be in Doha.
Okay.
This ain't gonna work. So now I do a desk job, and which... you know, they hire a lot of ex-pilots to do this job, mm-hmm. which is basically, I just plan the missions. I plan all, you know, I work at a place where it's called the Tanker Airlift Control Center. It's a fancy name for what we do is we work for Department of Defense and we move their stuff. We move their people and we move their cargo by air. Mm-hmm. So what I figure out is, okay, you have a plane that needs to leave Charleston and then deliver in Bagram. Here's the process it needs to go through. Here are the countries mm-hmm. we need to talk to. Here's how much fuel it's going to need. I just do all the planning. All right. I do all the logistics.
Logistics, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And what's gratifying is when I was there this past week, people are talking about Nepal. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how are we going to get a C-17? I just heard on NPR, they got a C-17 on the ground in Nepal. I'm like, those are my boys. That's mm-hmm. us doing our job. Mm-hmm. So shout out to my TACC.
See, this all is right. Let me ask you a question about how do you use your background to help you in writing? Right. I find that fascinating because, like, just listening to you talking about logistics reminds me of the short films and web series and things that you've done before.
Yeah.
And you're in charge.
Right.
You
right.
have to handle all those yes. different departments pretty much.
I mean, because when I did my short films, and I probably will never do this again, mm-hmm. I was director, producer, writer, craft mm-hmm. service. I mean, I was casting. I was mm-hmm. doing everything myself because mm-hmm. I'm in St. Louis and I don't have much money.
You have Uncle Hilliard now. You don't need to do all that.
Yeah.
You have Uncle Hilliard now.
So, you know, I'm doing 15 different things. But again, mm-hmm. having a mind that can organize and, mm-hmm. and figure things out and delegate to mm-hmm. where I need to, that helps too. You know, mm-hmm. and that, again, yeah, that comes from military background, I mm-hmm. guess. I mean, I don't know, I've met some people in the military that don't have that. I'm kind of like, how do you even survive?
Mm-hmm. But see, I'm just saying, I think that your background helps you.
Yeah.
You know, the organization,
oh, sure.
the repetition.
And it helps me get my butt in the writing seat every day, sure. too. Because I make
that
these
discipline.
Little, I make these little deals with myself, too. Like, I had one on Friday. Mm-hmm. Linnell, you cannot go see Avengers until you get Act 4 of this outline done. All right, sit your butt in the seat, get mm-hmm. it figured out.
That's
done.
Like me.
You have to.
Yeah.
You have to.
I had a deal mm-hmm. yesterday. You cannot watch the Pacquiao-Mayweather fight until you finish Act 5.
Really?
You know, so uh-huh. this has to be done. And if mm-hmm. it's not done, you don't get to go.
Oh.
So, yeah, I have a lot of internal discipline.
That's good.
But, I mean, I'm type A, mm-hmm. you know, kind of organized, mm-hmm. control, and I have to let go of some of that sometimes, sure. which is something I'm working on. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, you're going to work with other people who are type B. You're going to be in the writer's room with people who are like, that their mind doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. And you have to be okay with it. And mm-hmm. you have to be able to compromise and meet them halfway. You know, and not just, the old me, honestly, the mm-hmm. old me would be like, you know, what's, the, like, I would attack them. You know, like, you're wrong and I'm right. It's mm-hmm. like, no, there's several ways to skin this cat,
sure.
you know.
That's maturity too.
Yeah, it comes with age. Again, I'm not in my 20s trying to break in. Mm-hmm. I'm, you know, older. Mm-hmm. You know,
like, I'm grown. Yeah. I've been through. I've flown planes, bitches. Deal.
But it's but it's important to me too. To like, I don't have any unfinished scripts. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I meet people all the time. Like, oh, I got to Act 2 and I lost. I just stopped and I moved mm-hmm. back on. And I keep seeing those people. Corey Mandel.
Oh, we see them all the
time. Corey Mandel calls them writer zombies. He has an excellent blog on his if you know who Corey Mandel is, mm-hmm. he teaches at UCLA and he has his own writer's workshop here in town.
Mm-hmm. At Santa Monica World.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. Mm-hmm. And I've been meaning to go. I've been meaning to.
Well, you can come to the hatchery.
You can. But, you know, what he talks about, he calls them writer zombies. And these people you see out at these panels and events, and they walk around, oh, I'm a writer. Oh. It's like, well, and there's one lady, I'll call her Becky. And mm-hmm. I see Becky at a lot of different
events. Hilarious.
And I'll say, hey, Becky, how's your script coming? Oh, I haven't really worked on it. You know, I saw a lot of them, I mean, at that staffing season is now event at the Writers mm-hmm. Guild. I saw Becky there, you know, and I'm kind of like, she's at everything. And but instead of going to these panels, sit home and do your writing, finish your work, because all these panels are going to tell you is that you need to have a finished script. Sometimes people come to these panels thinking, oh, I'm going to catch the eye of the showrunner and I'm going to wow them and they're just going to hire me even though I haven't finished my script.
Not how it works.
Finish your work.
Yeah.
Stay home.
You because you ain't even ready.
Becky, stay home.
What difference does it make?
Because no one's going to hire you with an unfinished script when you need to be on a network show and be able to get it done in a week or two. You know? So you haven't shown that you have the internal motivation and discipline.
Becky, put the keys down,
Becky. Let's talk about hustle for just a quick sec. We're about to wrap it up. Let's talk about the hustle muscle, which Bettencourt always talks about.
I love that. The hustle muscle.
You said something interesting to me, because I'm on three committees at the Writers Guild.
Yes.
One of them, my favorite one, why should I put it out there? Fuck it, I'm going to put it out there.
Okay.
Because that's just who I am.
Yeah.
Is the Education Committee, which Jeff Mulvoyne runs.
Yeah.
We have a meeting on Tuesday night. Matter of fact, you mm-hmm. need to bring your little ass in there.
He's on me.
Yeah, you can go.
I know.
You know?
I know.
And now, but here's the interesting thing. Here's what I like about you. And here, this is interesting. You were talking about how you ended up joining the Women's Committee, which is one of the most powerful committees there. They have big events, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And just so happened you're sitting right next to, you know, somebody who happens to be the wife to one
Did
of these.
Did not know, yeah.
But they noticed.
Yeah.
They probably have been noticing for a while.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I'm getting that. Because now, for instance, they're going to do a podcast at the Writers Guild.
Awesome.
And I helped the subcommittee put it together. So at some point we're having a meeting and we always, everything has to be talked about in the whole room. And Jeff, you know, he doesn't do it. So it's where it's his word and that's what we do. He lets us all agree or not, which I know, you know, what he does.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, so when some people were like, well, I'm not sure. And blah, 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 blah. And Jeff says, well, wait a minute. We got Hilliard here in the room. He's got one of the best shows out there. And I looked at him like, I didn't even know you listened to my damn show.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Isn't that sneaky?
He's like, oh, of course. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. I had no idea.
Right.
And so what I'm saying is sometimes that hustle muscle of being in the right place and being ready.
Being a professional at all times.
Yes, right.
Even when stuff is breaking down and getting really unprofessional, wherever you are, because I've seen instances of that in different rooms or different venues where things are getting real unprofessional, still rise above and be a professional. That will get you noticed, too.
Sure.
Yeah.
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 But anyway, so I just thought that was interesting. So I'm just always trying to encourage people, you guys who are in the Writers Guild, we don't work our butts off to get in the Writers Guild to not be a part of what's going on there. I don't understand that.
I'm so interested in the Guild. I mean, for me, I've never been in a union, you know. When I joined the Guild, I was like, what is this about? And how can I contribute? And what can I do? And so I went to Candidates Night. I will put this out there right now. Candidates Night was so underattended, it made me sick.
Wow, really?
You know, because you remember we were voting for the board members. This wasn't too long ago, maybe 6 to 7 months ago. Mm-hmm. And they had free food and free drinks. And all you had to, and each of the candidates afterwards, after you got your free food and free drinks, writers, you got to then hear what each person had to say. Mm-hmm. They had 3 minutes. They could stand up and say, here's why I'm running for the board. Here's what I'm going to do. And it was so enlightening. Chernold Edwards ran.
Chernold, she's on tomorrow
on our new episode. Awesome. Yeah. Yeah, she ran and I love her presentation. I voted for her.
She's a beast.
Yeah.
She is.
She's
a beast.
So I just
And now she's on Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah. Did you see that picture that tweeted at her in the room?
Sleepy Hollow. Co-EP. Yeah. Wow. So that's great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was amazed that more people didn't capitalize on opportunity to come here. Who are the people instead of just pencil whipping the ballot when it comes in your mailbox to actually go to the Guild, see the person face to face, hear what they're about, get some snacks, you know, it was a great evening and there were empty seats there. And I'm like, what is going on?
Just stick me in your purse next time.
The other, I will come for the snacks. Since I'm on the subject, DC Fontana, who was a woman writer on Star Trek. People don't know that there were women writers on Star Trek. There weren't many. And she, you know, I don't think her name change came as a result of being a woman during the 60s trying to write on a sci-fi show, but I'm sure it had something to do with it. The initial thing probably had something to do with it, although she didn't really confirm that. But I was amazed. There were empty seats at that event. I was like, I was dying to hear what this woman had to say. She's someone who worked with Gene Roddenberry. She worked on Star Trek, which started a franchise, which is still going on to this day.
Right.
And there were empty seats in there. I'm just like, but that staffing season event, people, it was...
Well, I helped them put it together.
It was not enough seats. People were sitting on the floor.
People were standing in the standing room only,
There were no seats.
Because everybody wants to be on staff, but nobody's willing to do the work to get on the staff.
Yeah.
They all are thinking, like you said, I'm going to show up to this event, and we'll say... Please, because I'm part of almost every panel in there. I'm part of the subcommittee.
Right.
And so do we always say, please do not rush them at the end of it and give them your...
Right.
I still see people going... You know, trying to hand people their scripts. And I'm like, what the fuck?
You need to hire me going to just slap it up the hand.
Did you not hear him say?
You expected...
You guys are in the Guild and you're acting. And again, be a professional even when... Things are being unprofessional. So me, when I see that, I'm like, I'm not going to be like one of those people that's trying to hand a script to Javier Griot, Mark's Watch. Is that his name right? I'm not gonna, that's not what I'm going to do.
Especially when someone told you not to do it.
That makes you a writer zombie.
That's a writer zombie.
That's a writer zombie.
Even if you're functional.
Yeah.
You're a fucking...
Exactly. You're a writer zombie.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's
There's
funny.
One thing I want to share with your readers. I brought, you know, I didn't prepare a whole lot for this podcast.
Don't get
but there's a woman named Cheryl Strayed. She wrote a book called Wild. And then it got made into a movie with Reese Witherspoon, et cetera. Before she was a A-list writer selling millions of books, she made a living answering like a Dear Abby type column on the internet. Okay. Called, but she went by the name of Sugar, so she had a pseudonym. So people would write into Sugar and say, oh, I got a problem with this, I got a problem with that. So one lady writes in, and she's 26, and she's trying to be a writer, and she's like, oh, I'm having issues, and no one's liking my stuff, and I'm depressed, and da-da-da-da. She goes on and on and on. Mm-hmm. And so Cheryl Strait, as Sugar, writes back to her the following, giving her advice on, you know, being a woman and trying to write, blah, blah, blah. The unifying theme is resilience and faith. The unifying theme is being a warrior and a motherfucker. It is not fragility. It is strength. It's nerve. And if your nerve deny you, as Emily Dickinson wrote, go above your nerve. Writing is hard for every last one of us, straight white men included. Coal mining is harder. Do you think miners stand around all day talking about how hard it is to mine for coal? They do not.
They do it.
They simply dig. So write, not like a girl, not like a boy, write like a motherfucker.
Damn.
And so those are Cheryl Strait's words.
That's what's up. Okay. Yes. I love
that's
that.
That's the thing. Like, yes. Yeah. Write like a motherfucker.
Yes. Yeah. And they have, if you want to buy a mug, if you want to buy a mug that says write like a motherfucker,
what?
You
they
can go to the rumpus.net.
Okay.
rumpus.net. Or t-shirt, whatever.
I can't have that at work around the little people, but I can have it around the
But I can put it, I can put it on my desk. I mean, I've, and since I saw this, I was like, that's my mantra. Even the thing I'm wrestling with right now, like, write like a motherfucker.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Like, just it's do it's the damn
like,
thing.
It's kind of like the word I gave for Lisa, because I was, you know, jokingly I would say this bitch over here, and I'm like, cinephile bitch.
Okay.
Yeah. That's her. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what's up. So on that note, thank you very much.
No, Linnell. Thank you for having me. I know you've been asking for a while. I'm so glad I finally got to
I know. It's like, is she ever gonna come?
Oh, of course I am. I was just
and
I was
text
just,
like, she's coming, like, oh, okay, yay.
I was just busy like trying to get my Z Nation script done and turned in and get my mind in the zombie apocalypse, which was kind of crazy, and I, you know, stretching some muscles I didn't have. I'm so glad I did. I'm a better writer for it now.
Good.
Going into this kind of, you know, horror scene where people are biting and
the
blood and
the deliciousness of it all. Yes. It.
Everywhere. So,
he's dead.
Yeah. That was kind of preoccupying me for a while, but now that's behind me. I'm like, oh, okay.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
That's what's up.
We have to live tweet when your episode comes on. I'm like, hey,
I will.
Hey,
I will.
Let us know. That way we can get
I'm excited about it.
When's the new season start, by the way?
Oh, we haven't gotten a premiere. I shouldn't have sighed like that. We haven't gotten a premiere date, but it'll be this fall. I think they're thinking end of August, maybe.
Okay.
The show did pretty well for sci-fi.
It did.
First time around.
I mean, I was always talking about it and blasting it, you know. But Kalita's my girl, so I'm always trying to promote her.
Yeah. She's great. She's great.
We did a play together, like,
really?
1998.
Well, I don't believe that because Kalita doesn't look old enough to be. No,
I know she's a vampire,
possible.
Probably.
Oh, yeah, she was gorgeous then, too.
Yeah.
And we used to just sit and talk because we didn't go on for like a while. Then we'd go on.
Right.
And I'd be like, girl, you know you're going to be a star. She's like, oh, no. And then she got Bernie Mac, like two or three years later.
Yes.
Yeah.
And now she's on our show and they're shooting in Spokane, Washington right now.
Wow.
So
nice.
That's where they shoot it.
Mm-hmm. Spokane, Washington.
Well, I thought they were in Canada because of the asylum.
I mean, it kind of looks like Canada because it's a lot of pines and out in the middle of nowhere. But they use Spokane in the past for so many different other locales.
We'll get it in.
But I think after season two, they talked about, all right, if we do a season three, we're going to move the show. Because we kind of shot Spokane out. Like, you can't, you know, there's only so much you can shoot here before it starts to look like the same.
True.
And it's like, oh, that's from season one.
Yeah.
You know?
So, that's
let's see, our fans were like watching every detail, every nuance.
They do.
Yeah.
They do. People are die hard, especially with the internet.
Yeah.
So look, thank you very much, Linnell. We appreciate having you.
Thank you.
You're my sister, and I love you, and I'm proud of you.
Aww.
And that's what's up. So, where can people find you at?
I'm on Twitter at Linnell White, and I'll spell that LYNELLEWHITE.
That's what's up. You know, that's it?
I'm also on Facebook.
Is that more like family, friends, stuff like that?
No. Facebook is anybody because I don't really put too much personal stuff on.
Okay,
I kind of use it like, hey, look out for this, or hey, I'm doing this, or whatever. I'm not a big social media person, but I'm doing. Twitter is actually the better way to reach me, you know,
because it's less characters. Right, like, I ain't gotta spend all day. Facebook will be there all day. Like, nah.
I used to have a website back in the day, but I haven't kept it up since like 2010. So
I have a WordPress. I can't get time for that.
But Z Nation's on Netflix. Season one's on Netflix. Check that out, and then look for season two this fall.
That's what's up.
I'll have an episode in there where they go to Mexico.
Yes.
That's
true. Oh, you got to definitely tweet us for that one. I had to get on there and get on the people. Like, everybody, we got to watch your episode. Come on, tweet, live tweet.
But we live tweet it. So, where are you at, Lisa Cole Jam?
I'm on Twitter.
Okay. She used to say something bad about it, so now she's embraced it.
Oh, she's no, she used to talk about how people, if you unfollow me, you know, I know who you are.
You know what?
Well, I'm so careful around that follow button when I'm on Lisa's page. I'm like, whoa, don't hit unfollow because she don't know.
No one has followed me for like, unfollowed me for like months.
Really?
Yeah. So I think people have finally realized, okay, she's who she says she is, and they've gotten comfortable with me. So they've accepted.
You tweet some good stuff, though.
Well, I tweet a lot of stuff, and a lot of it, like, pretty much when I tweet out there is when I'm thinking, you know, that's me tweeting. I'm not a baller yet where like people tweet stuff for you, but usually that's me tweeting on there. But yeah, you can find me on there. You can also find me on Bitchflix if you want to read some of my film reviews that come from a feminist perspective, intersection, all that great stuff. And you can catch my latest short story, Three Voices, on Uncanny Magazine. It comes out May 5th, so by the time this airs, it should be out. And if you can't afford it, you can wait until June 2nd when it comes online for free, if you must.
That's hilarious. And I'm your host, Hilliard Guest, and you can find me on Twitter, at Hilliard Guest. Shut up, Lisa.
I didn't say anything.
You was thinking it.
I was thinking I should drink some water right now. I was not.
She always teased me because I say Twitter.
Because it sounds British.
Twitter, and some tea and crumpets.
I would say Twitter if I was doing it like that. And you can also find us, our show, Screenwriters RR, on Twitter. Also, if you guys have anything you guys want to email us or anything like that, screenwritersrantroom@gmail.com. Special thank you again for our man Kevin Killebrew for sitting in with us, just hanging out with us today. We love you. Thank you. Look at him thinking he all cool and shit.
He just loves hanging out with us.
And again, special shout out to a couple of you guys, you countries out there. I mean, I'm sure I should be doing this for a lot of the top states, but y'all, motherfuckers, already here. Y'all know who y'all are. Mm-hmm. You know, New York, Chicago, Miami, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? San Francisco, yeah. My cousins. Yeah. But special shout out, Japan.
Been there.
England, been there. Of course. You ain't been nowhere.
She's been everywhere.
She flew over there. She's like, I flew over there. Japan, I think I just said. Mm-hmm. Lithuania. I'm still always surprised.
I have not been to Lithuania.
Every week we can get more numbers in Lithuania.
Been there. I need to go.
Australia, Lithuania. France, Brazil. Wow. Brazil's a big one. Mm-hmm. Brazil's number three. Thank y'all, Brazil. We love y'all. Mm-hmm. Of course, England is number two. Canada is number four. So that's what's up. So I'm gonna give it. That's about it. Oh, South Africa. Got to give y'all because you guys are always out there. So with that, we appreciate it. We love y'all. Y'all know what to do on this show.
What would that be? He's just giggling over here.
On this show,
yes.
We keep it street.
What we do?
We keep it opinionated. Uh-huh. And we keep it what? 2015. Yeah.
Ciao, people.
Peace, y'all.
Bye.
Yeah, man, I got something to get off my chest.
Everyone got one. What's your opinion? This is the rap room. Tongues won't be bitten. Ain't no rules, just spill it. And anybody can get it. No limit. We get to kill it. You tuning into the thrillers. And no, ain't no stopping. No. Any topic, even the random.
It's a brand.
I hope that you're ready. We entering in the zone soon. We on a grown shit. Welcome to the rap room.